the underground bunker of the Civitas Studio in Raleigh, North Carolina, it's Civitalk with your hosts, Brooke Medina and Ray Nothstein. We're here to connect culture with civics, making it relevant to your daily life. And dare we say, existence at a time where too many are triggered and offended. So, relax. But buckle up and let's wade into the deep end. What's really happening in your old North State?
Welcome to another edition of Civitalk. Today we're discussing impeachment, the political careers of Mark Meadows and Pat McCrory. Also, 2020 New Year's predictions. Brooke, how's it going?
It's going wonderful. We're getting closer to Christmas, and by the time some of you listen to this, it might be Christmas, so let us know how it went.
Yeah, definitely. Give us feedback about Christmas, how the family's doing, everything. Just we feel like we don't hear enough from our listeners.
Yeah, especially if there was interesting drama around the Christmas dinner table. If you guys talked impeachment and you had some crazy family members, please, we would love to hear about it because we appreciate that sort of entertainment.
All right, Brooke, I know you're a fashionista, so I want to get your take. I feel like I'm not as up as you might be on fashion trends for 2020, but I need to know what to wear, what's out there that could be, you know, mind-bending.
Okay, so clearly you need to give your wife, Kelly, a good shopping list for you for 2020 so that you can go in next year like a diva.
Because I don't know if Manpreets are going to be in. I don't know, you know.
Manpreets.
Yeah,
oh,
if Daisy Dukes are going to be in for men. These are things
they
I need to know.
They already are in for men.
Are they?
Yes, the chubby shorts. They're called chubbies, 3-inch inseam. Come on, Ray.
Okay, I don't have any of those.
Well, Gabe, what are you doing with your life
if you don't
have
3-inch inseam? I did not wear them to the Civitas Christmas party, even though there was a lot of demand.
Ray did not gift us with that view for Christmas. But okay, let's talk a little bit about some of the fashion trends that we need to leave behind in 2019 and some of the ones that we can take with us into 2020, like an old friend that we still want to keep around. A couple of things. This past year saw a rise in something I like to refer to as ugly shoes, and it's just these big old clunky sneakers that look like old Kmart dad shoes, and they were worn by a lot of like Instagram models and everything. So those need to stay in 2019 because those were the ugliest things. They look like little UFOs on people's feet that were really just unattractive and a bad shoe silhouette. See, I'm gonna show Ray a photo of one of them. So you can see. Isn't that ugly?
That's pretty ugly.
Yeah.
Did you ever like the Chuck Taylors? You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah.
You like
those?
Yeah,
I like Chucks.
Okay.
And those are pretty cool. I mean, those are an evergreen piece that everyone should have in their wardrobe.
Really? I think I had them in like kindergarten, but I don't know if I have them now.
But they're classics.
Okay.
I mean, you can continue to wear Chucks even nowadays. Now, I say that I do not have a pair myself because I spend all my Chuck money on my kids buying them Chucks. But very, very good one to have. Now, something that we do want to keep in mind when we're shopping in 2020 is that animal print is still going to be a thing. So embrace it. So Ray, I know you were talking about those cheetah shoes that you want to get. So I say go for it.
I'll think about it. I can't commit to cheetah shoes today.
But you can going into 2020. I feel like that would be, you know, if there's ever an area where you maybe, or a day that you have lower self-confidence that day, I feel like it would boost it. I know I've got cheetah heels and they boost my self-confidence every day that I wear them. So,
is neon? What about neon? Will that
ew,
be back?
Ew, gross.
No,
remember
that
needs to stay in the 90s.
Early 90s.
Yeah, neon does nothing for most people's skin tone. There are some that can wear it, but especially if you're on the paler side, which especially during the winter, I get to looking that way. I do not do neon. Earth tones are much more the way to go. And then I want to just touch on one more fashion trend that we want to embrace in 2020, and that is the puffed sleeve. I don't know if you ever saw Anne of Green Gables, the movie, but she raved about puffed sleeves, and it is coming back 100 years later. And so you are going to see more women donning puffed sleeves.
Okay. I see a note on my notes for to inquire about mangere, but I will just not go there.
Yeah.
We'll just say that's not going to be it.
I don't think we should talk about that on the podcast. If you have questions about that, send them to Ray.
These are just things I see on Twitter, so I don't know, you know, how serious we should take it or not.
Let's let the Manjaray discussion happen on someone else's podcast, not called Civitalk.
All right. Let's talk about impeachment because, you know, the people listening, this is a little bit older for them, but this vote just happened as we record last night, and I think it was pretty much every Democrat except two voted for impeachment. One is switching to the Republican Party from New Jersey, okay. And then Tulsi Gabbard voted present. Mm. I can't remember the other one. There was also a Democrat from Maine who voted yes or aye on one article of impeachment, not the other one, not only the obstruction of Congress charge. So
presuming those were people.
And Amash, of course, voted for it, which he said he was going to.
Right. And he's left the Republican Party anyways. And I would presume that those other two that voted either just for that one article or against are in vulnerable districts. And we know Tulsi has her reasons for voting against it as well.
So yeah, it's just kind of interesting because, I mean, you know, we're not going to analyze what just happened last night because I know you guys have already heard about impeachment and studied it yourself. But it's kind of interesting going into 2020 what this all means for the president. Obviously, he had a big rally in Battle Creek and had some funny quotes and stormed back. And basically, there's a piece in, I don't remember if it was Rolling Stone or Vanity Fair, but it was talking about how the president's going to exact his revenge and get back at these Democrats. He's certainly raising a lot of money through impeachment.
Oh, he's raising a ton of money. So I was actually just looking this up, and the Republican Party brought in a whopping $20.6 million in November, and that's they currently have the most cash on hand that they've had since before the 2012 presidential election. So this has been like a cash cow for them.
Yeah, the most interesting thing that happened today, the day after impeachment, is Nancy Pelosi in a press conference said she didn't want to talk about it anymore. She was pressed by the media kind of to give more details about impeachment. And the big news, which McConnell has already responded to, Nancy Pelosi said she may not be sending up the articles to the Senate because she said it won't be a fair process in the Senate, which is kind of ironic if you consider the House a fair process. But she said she's not going to be sending those, may not be sending those articles up for impeachment, at least right away. So that kind of cloudies the water a little bit in terms of what the impeachment process is. There's kind of a clear outline in the Constitution to, you know, they're tried in the Senate. The Senate gets to make up their own kind of rules. The House kind of follows their own rules. So it just makes it, to me, look a little bit more political. And certainly, I mean, if I was making a prediction today based on what happened, I think this helps Donald Trump going into 2020, not just from a fundraising standpoint, but I feel like even Pelosi may see the writing on the wall, wanting to pivot away from impeachment, that this is not a winner for her party right now. Of course, a lot can change by 2020, and there'll be, you know, whether there's a recession or what's going on with the economy, that'll play a big role. But I feel like this is just not a winning issue for Democrats right now.
No, I don't think it is either. I was actually just reading this editorial on the National Review site, and they were talking about, you know, there were some things in that whole Ukraine handling that, according to this editorial, they felt like deserved some scrutiny and some questioning, but that it didn't rise to the level of impeachable offenses. But the Democrats were hell-bent anyways since 2018, or actually 2017, to ensure impeachment happened. So it seemed inevitable. And so what these editors wrote was, impeachment isn't a climax or an end. It's rather just another phase in the broader contention over Trump that will proceed as usual after his inevitable acquittal in the Senate. So even if it does go to the Senate, which we're not sure exactly when that's going to happen, according to, you know, what Ray just said, he's going to be acquitted there unless something, you know, earth-shattering were to change between now and then. And so it's just more political theater in an election year that is fast approaching us, that is going to, I feel like, rain down upon the American people even more political theater. And we're just getting kind of apathetic toward all of this, I would say, wouldn't you, Ray, where it's just more white noise at this juncture?
Yeah, I mean, I just honestly didn't pay real close attention to it because it just felt political to me. You had members of Congress on the Democrat side who said that they were going to impeach. That was part of their actual election campaign as they ran for the House, that they were able to weed out some of the more moderate Democrats in some of these primaries by saying that they were going to be strong impeachment supporters. So to me, it just always felt political. Certainly, there's a lot of problems with Donald Trump and his presidency. But, you know, McConnell called this the most flimsy impeachment ever. He pointed to some specifics regarding lack of clear, coherent charges from a legal perspective in terms of actual crimes. So, you know, it just doesn't seem like it's going anywhere, obviously. And if it's going anywhere, it just seems like it could potentially brew into a bigger political backlash.
Yeah, I think so. And I believe people are becoming impeachment weary. They have.
People should be cynical about the federal government just in general, right? I mean, whatever's going on, just be cynical about it. They're not solving any problems. They don't have the ability to restore normal budget operations to the House or the Senate. This has been going on for over a decade where they haven't been able to do any sort of regular rules for the budget process. They just send up these omnibus bills. I mean, to me, kind of the federal government in a large part, Congress is the most egregious arm of the federal government. If you look at the, you know, judicial executive branch, and that's saying a lot with you have Trump in the presidency, that the Congress has sort of just become so inept at their job. You know, that's kind of my view of it. Other people may have different takes, but it's just broken and dysfunctional. And I think it reflects a lot of the broken dysfunction and division in the country. And I don't know how you, and I'm not saying that's all a bad thing, because the founders set up a system that was supposed to, you know, roadblock a lot of legislation, and things are supposed to die for a reason, because you'd rather have not, you know, bad legislation instead of good. You'd rather stop bad legislation than pass good legislation. So the reason what the founders did what they did, but boy, and Congress is just a mess. I mean, I don't really know how to solve that without a fundamental cultural change in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of Congress, let's talk about North Carolina's congressional delegation, namely Congressman Mark Meadows, who just announced that he is not going to run for re-election. And so he's in North Carolina's 11th district, which was redrawn slightly.
Yeah, not dramatically. Not dramatically. Not like Mark Walker's district, who decided he's not running either, because his district was redrawn much more dramatically.
Yeah, yeah. So one can probably understand Mark Walker's decision. Mark Meadows, though, when I was reading his press release earlier today, he said that he wasn't going to run. However, that he was still very much committed to working with the Trump administration, and they're just only getting started. So what do you think that means?
Yeah, I mean, he was rumored that he was going to leave the House and be the chief of staff for President Trump a few months back. But, you know, I think he'll go to work for Trump somewhere in his, maybe his cabinet or in his administration. So to me, it's potentially that Meadows could go work for Trump for a few years, come back to North Carolina, maybe run for Senate in 2022. That's potentially possible. He would certainly have the support of Trump. They're very tight. Meadows has grown tighter and tighter with this president as time has gone on. So he'll have a lot of opportunities to do things, because let's say Trump gets reelected, then he'll have the full backing of the president for whatever he decides to do.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, we were talking, Ray and I were talking about this with our elections policy analyst, Andy Jackson, who just knows all things elections. It's amazing what all he has fit into that brain of his when it comes to just electoral and redistricting things. But I had asked him about a comment on Twitter from David Frum, who writes for The Atlantic, and he's a lefty. And he said, David Frum had said, Mark Meadows is living Congress because a judicial panel struck down the gerrymander essential to his political survival. Thought that was interesting, because David Frum here is suggesting that Mark Meadows couldn't get reelected in this newly redrawn district, and it was essentially just poetic justice.
Right.
But when we were talking to Andy said, no, this district is still relatively safe for Meadows. So I think that speaks more to your theory that Meadows is probably just joining the Trump campaign, and that postures him or sets him up maybe for a 2022 run if he so chooses in the Senate.
Right. And that would be an interesting, because you have Walker saying he may run for that seat, and you have McCrory, which we'll talk about in a minute. Well, basically with McCrory, he's not running for governor, as you already know, which we didn't expect. but he may also, he said he's very open to the 2022 Senate run. So it's potentially possible. I don't think you'd have all three in that race, but it's potentially you'd have a few of them in that race. So it could be very, very interesting looking to secede Richard Burr.
Yeah. So the political dynamics, the players are changing. The dynamics seem to be fairly entrenched at the moment, but 2020 is coming right around the corner. So I tell everyone, buckle up. We're going to be doing a lot more public opinion polling on this. We will continue to keep our fingers on the pulse of public opinion across the state. North Carolina is a purple state. We're a swing state. Ray has written about this numerous times. And so that's why you're seeing more Democratic presidential candidates visiting us as opposed to some other states. We're a critical win for them. And so it will be interesting to see how all of this takes shape in 2020. But let's go ahead, and I want to talk about two more things before we close this podcast. Mm-hmm. One is Baby Yoda. Have you seen Baby Yoda?
I haven't really paid attention to Star Wars since I was a kid, but Baby Yoda is very cute. I will say that because I've seen memes and stuff.
Oh, he's adorable.
Is he a new introduction, Baby Yoda?
So Disney Plus just came out with their streaming service, and so they have a show on there called Mandalorian. Mm-hmm. And so this is supposed to be, my 13-year-old son is a huge Star Wars fan, mm-hmm. so he's been explaining this to me while I was getting ready this morning, actually. And he was telling me, okay, so there's the Empire, and then there's the First Order, and this Mandalorian, I think I'm explaining it right. Star Wars nerds, you can correct me if you want. But Mandalorian takes place in between the Empire and the First Order. And so this is where Baby Yoda is fixed in this sort of chronological period. And he is the most adorable thing. So all I'm just saying is, I've been thinking about Baby Yoda ever since I saw him, and I want a Baby Yoda for Christmas. And apparently, there is a lot of money to be made off of Baby Yodas. There's a Baby Yoda black market going on.
Wow, it's like the Cabbage Patch stuff in the 80s.
Yes, it is. I had a knockoff Cabbage Patch when I was a kid. Yep. But I just feel like our audience needs to know that Baby Yoda is out there and exists. And if you haven't seen him yet, please Google his picture and your life will be changed. And then I wanted to talk about one other thing, which I look to you as sort of a book wizard. You know all things about reading because you like to read. You smart man.
I do
man.
Love to read. I wanted to go through the top books of 2020, but we don't have time for that. You wanted to talk about J.K. Rowling, right, in her comments?
I do, but I also want to talk about the books. What should we talk about?
Let's talk about J.K. Rowling because it's very interesting.
It is pretty
interesting. It's more interesting than books.
People and, well, bored. She's a writer. So
plus, we don't know all the great books that will be out in 2020 yet. I mean, there's a few that I know of, but not really anything.
Let's talk about J.K. Rowling then. Okay, so...
Did you ever read Harry Potter? Because I didn't.
I have not read Harry Potter. I was going to read it to my kids, and then life got...
When I was working in D.C., this was actually pre-9/11, and I was working for Congressman Gene Taylor. I went back to work in the district office after not liking D.C. a whole lot. But I remember getting on the Metro and seeing you don't usually have four-star generals riding the Metro, but you'd have two-star generals riding the Metro and stuff going to the Pentagon. And they were not all of them, but a lot of them were reading Harry Potter books. I just thought that was kind of strange.
Yeah.
And then I come to realize later that more people were reading Harry Potter books than I thought.
It's a classic at this juncture, I think. And so certainly something I know I want to spend some time reading. I should probably just do the audiobooks, but I
just don't like fantasy type stuff. No, so I don't think I would like it. Anyways, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about J.K. Rowling's comments where, Brooke, I think you have them.
Yes, I do. So J.K. Rowling is, she doesn't speak out a lot, I think.
She's pretty liberal, though.
Liberal.
Right.
But on this particular topic, she hasn't spoken out much on Twitter lately, but this has to do with transgenderism. And anyways, the comment was made this week, and this is what she says on Twitter. She says, "Dress however you please, call yourself whatever you like, sleep with any consenting adult who will have you, live your best life in peace and security, but force women out of their jobs for stating that sex is real? I stand with Maya. This is not a drill." And so what she's referring to is a professor named Maya Forsteder, which is, I believe she's a professor in the United Kingdom. And she was essentially punished for hate speech and I think even lost her job because she stated that men are men and women are women and that there are some biological facts that just can't be changed despite the culture wars that say otherwise. So J.K. Rowling has now been accused of being a TERF. Do you know what a TERF is, Ray?
No, but you explained it to me earlier. I've already forgotten, but I don't remember the acronym.
TERF, T-E-R-F. She is now branded as a trans-exclusionary radical feminist.
Wow. Hateful.
Very hateful. But yeah, so the pile-on is already beginning for Rowling.
I saw some nasty tweets. I was
very mean ones.
F her and yeah. Transphobic and all that. And
you don't conform with the prevailing sexual orientation heterodoxy, and you get branded very quickly.
Yeah,
don't you?
It's pretty intense out there.
But I think what I wanted to point out in this, and I think is just worth noting, is that even though Rowling is a lefty. And most trans activists are lefties. There's still this huge division among what we would call a traditional feminist in that sort of 70s feminism mold right. versus what's going on in the trans front. Because the traditional feminist, and I use the word traditional loosely because we're not talking like Susan B. Anthony's here.
No.
But they spent a lot of time fighting for women's equality in the workplace and against sexual harassment and things like that. And they feel in some ways that this the ability for a biological male to automatically identify as a woman is a threat to their protection or the protection of some women that they feel are more vulnerable to predatory behaviors by men.
Yeah, we already see this playing out in Title IX, of course, with the track and other sports too, but primarily in the single sport arena where you have a male who identifies as female running track and winning state titles in Connecticut. And there's
same with wrestling.
Yeah, there's some other examples too where it's just clear when you look at the bodies that there's a physical advantage in terms of just muscular definition and tone. So you're already seeing this, and it's kind of ironic in the sense that Title IX was created to protect females in sports and in academics and in life in terms of money being spent, but also in terms of equity in some of these sports. And now it's being used against them in many respects by this whole this new wave of sexual revolution.
Right, it is. And the thing is, I haven't seen very many people artfully sort of handle the dignity conversation that we need to have around those that identify as transgender and helping them navigate that. Because if someone truly is suffering from gender dysphoria, they need our compassion and our assistance and our help and support as they work through that. So there's that component to this. And then there's this sort of militant trans activism side that really has to be pushed back and addressed, because if you do have daughters or you're a female yourself or you're in sports and a female, you recognize that there is this sort of unfair advantage that and it puts many women in the sets us back a number of years when it comes to sort of this male-female dichotomy that used to just be so pervasive and something that many feminists have fought hard to eradicate. So it's a complex discussion, but at its core, I mean, let's just look at some biological realities, and I think J.K. Rowling was doing that and obviously is suffering the Twitter wrath.
Would you accept me as a woman if I decided to be a woman? There was a pause there. I feel hostility a little bit.
Do you want to? I would. I accept and embrace you as the person that God has made you, right?
Okay.
You are loved and cared for and made in the image of God.
Yeah, a little equivocation there, so I don't know.
So that's I think that's about it for this week's show. There's going to be a lot that that we're ramping up in 2020. So again, I issue this warning: buckle up, you guys, because it's going to be a bumpy ride. But I think it's going to be a good one too. There's going to be some promising policy victories, I think, on the horizon.
Yes, and stay tuned to Civitalk to see if I am a male or female in 2020.
After Christmas, yep. What did Ray get for Christmas?
Yep, just stay tuned. You'll want to just be with us to See what happens.
This journey. Yeah. Ray is so good at cliffhangers.
Yes, I really am.
Okay, you guys, we hope you have a wonderful break if you're taking a break over the holidays. And if you are in law enforcement or emergency management personnel, thank you so much. Military service.
Yes,
we know you're working through these holidays, even hospitality, if you're working in hospitality. So thank you all for what you do and your listenership. We greatly value it. And so hope you have a wonderful holiday time.
And Merry Christmas. Trump is still president. You can still say that.
Goodbye.